This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and a very warm welcome to the latest edition of Total Saints Podcast. This is our weekly get together to discuss the last 7 days supporting Southampton Football Club. As always, we're live streaming our podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch and YouTube. And if you're watching on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe to the channel to be the first to see our latest videos. As always, a massive thank you to our TSP patrons who support all of our work. You can visit patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast to find out more about getting involved. Coming up this week on the pod, two big games and two inevitable defeats this week. We'll pick over the bones of Bournemouth and Newcastle. And next up, it's Nottingham Forest away on Monday evening. We will preview that trip. My name is Martin Stark, and I'm joined this week by Steve Grant, who is the owner of Saints Web, and Glenda LaCour is the writer of the blog League One Minus 10. Underpinned by our TSP patrons, this is episode 231 of the Total Saints Podcast.
Your home for everything Southampton FC. From dedicated Saints insight to exclusive interviews. Live on YouTube every Sunday and available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is the Total Saints Podcast.
Now, in a week where we were hoping for 6 points, we didn't even manage six shots on target. So let's start with the Bournemouth debacle, shall we? A 1-0 defeat at St Mary's, arguably the biggest game of the year. And of course, it was a record-breaking 11th home defeat of the season. Glenn, I checked back through the WhatsApp. It was the 3rd of April when you predicted a limp 1-0 defeat. Did you think it would actually be as dreadful as it was on Thursday?
You never want it to be as dreadful as you suspect it's going to be, but the way I thought about it was that it's the most logical result to predict. You know, if you had every possible result, you know, on a list at the bookies, 1-0 to Bournemouth would be the favourite, and so it proved. He picked a strange old team. He basically picked the same team more or less that we had at Arsenal, apart from changing the goalkeeper, I think, and there was one other change when Chiletazar came in for Bella Kochap. So Bournemouth at home, Arsenal away, and he's picked the same team for both. Different assignments completely, but there you go. That's the sort of thing he does. McCarthy in goal was the sort of headline selection, wasn't it?
He was the winner of the lineup tombola that we spoke
about. Yeah, I guess so.
Which name are we going to pick out of the hat for a start?
I kind of reached the stage where I thought there's no point in changing the goalkeeper. It should have been done 10 games ago, but he did it for that game. For the first 15 minutes, I thought we looked okay. We had a bit of intent about us. We had a couple of sort of half chances, one for Walcott and one for Adam Armstrong near post, which was kind of a couple of bobbles that came back to him. But we had a couple of shots, looked okay. Bournemouth didn't offer much. But on about 15 minutes, they took over. They started getting Solanke into the game and we made him look like a world beater by basically not closing him down, giving him space to run into. The last half an hour of the first half was absolutely shocking. Didn't do anything. Bournemouth had a couple of chances, one narrowly over the bar. And then at half-time, we had that rare thing where James Ward-Prowse comes off. And the second half was the, you know, there's been a lot, but I thought the second half was the biggest shambles of Ruben Selle's time so far. Going to three at the back with Elianusi and Walker Peters on the wrong side as wingbacks. So you're not going to get any benefit from there, really. Certainly in an attacking sense.
I mean, that's a big claim because it's a low bar, isn't it?
It is in
terms of like how dreadful he's been as a manager.
No one seemed to know where they were supposed to be. There was one stage in the second half where it looked like Romeo Lavia was the only player in midfield. Armstrong was wide right, Maitland-Niles was wide right, Alcaraz was up front, and Lavia was in midfield on his own. And we kind of got away with that a little bit because Bournemouth had retreated, and you know we were building up ahead of steam for the last 10 minutes when it was already too late. But the shambles started at the start of the second half. Clearly hadn't practiced three at the back. No one knew where they were. Matter of time before Bournemouth scored. And they did. It's a bit of a bobbler. You know, it's just one of those things that goes against you when you're down the bottom. He didn't hit it properly, but it still found its way in. You know, he made a couple of substitutions with Stuart Armstrong and Che Adams coming on. You know, low bar, but they raised it a little bit. Stuart Armstrong probably put in more effort in those 15 minutes than he has done all season put together. Set up a goal, which then got disallowed, which kind of says it all. I mean, but did it make any difference at the end of the day? Okay, we might have had 5 minutes where, you know, there might have been a little bit of hope of nicking a totally undeserved win. And I suppose if it had ended in a draw, it would have made Bournemouth sweat a little bit more, but they won today, so it wouldn't have made a difference anyway. So that goal being disallowed really didn't make any difference. And when we had 10 games to go, we looked at the games against the other teams down the bottom. So it was West Ham at the time, Crystal Palace and Bournemouth, and thought we need sort of 7 or 9 points from those three games. And we got zero with zero goals. And we're still playing with no striker from the start of games. And the guy's an idiot. As far as I'm concerned, he can go. You know, he's been given the job to keep us up, and I know he's not technically failed yet, but we all know he has. It would be amazing if we don't finish flat last, and we're not going to get anywhere. You know, will we get 30 points? I doubt it. So I think that will be our worst ever season in the Premier League, in the top league. So. Certainly since it went to 3 points for a win. So, yeah, it's not been great, and it's not solely his fault, obviously. I'm sure we'll do a podcast on...
There's a whole episode to be done, isn't there, on the blame and who's at fault and when the decline started.
Yeah, and then he compounded it after the game by talking an absolute drivel in the press conference again, trying to justify the decisions that he makes. I mean, the one I liked is... Adam Armstrong played because he looked good in training.
Well, he would do against our defence.
Yeah, but to me, that's the sort of thing that you say when you promote an 18-year-old for his first game. You know, an experienced player, if he's had 70 rubbish games on the pitch, just because he has a good training session, you don't suddenly think he's going to buck the trend on the pitch. It's just madness. And if you're bottom of the league, not scoring any goals and losing every week, you'd better be able to explain your decisions when they don't work.
Are you as fed up of hearing from him as I am? You know, there was a time when you look forward to that Thursday press conference because you find out, who might be starting. There might be a couple of injuries, or there might be some tactics, and you'd listen to it and you'd be really up for the game at the weekend. But the guy just annoys me, and I've started avoiding the press conferences now.
Yes,
I don't want to read what he's got to say because it's just nonsense.
I prefer to read the bullet points than to listen to it. To be honest, that's where I've got to. It's reached sort of Claude Puel going back further, Jan Portvliet levels of utter garbage. I mean, it's a different kind of drivel to Nathan Jones, because Nathan Jones's drivel was all about himself. But drivel is still drivel at the end of the day. And, you know, we laugh at it because we've all got gallows humour about the whole thing now. Mm. But it isn't funny. We're supposed to be. This is going to be funny when I say this. We're supposed to be an elite level football team.
You know,
playing in the top league
in
the world, allegedly. And we've got this guy, hasn't got a clue, talking drivel. I mean, we've given him the job. He's never managed, as far as I know, he's never managed a men's team before. He's managed age group teams and he's been a coach.
Yeah.
And it's like signing a load of young players. It's you know, it might be brilliant, but the chances are it's not going to be. It's going to be an exceptional circumstance to make it brilliant. And he's been pretty dreadful. And I can't wait for him to leave. And it would be horrifying to think that he's not going to leave, because he's done absolutely nothing. What's it, 9 games without a win now? You know, and there are so many things that just don't make any sense.
Yeah, we'll be seeing that corner flag soon. If you're watching the stream, Jacob Tanswell from The Athletic has joined us, showing some dedication that I wish the players would. He's joining from a motorway service station or a McDonald's drive-through car park? Where are you tonight?
Yeah, so I'm in Durham services at the moment. I've just managed to get out of Newcastle. Yeah, it's been a long ride, which will be out tomorrow, and it's not been a great day. And I've spent like 2 days on my own, so I kind of want to come into this chat for a bit of
get
therapy,
some bits
really,
off your chest.
To talk to someone.
Tell us about the services. Are we talking KFC or is it McDonald's? What have we got?
It's a McDonald's today. You've got your typical WH Smith, Costa. There's a Travelodge as well. It's okay. It will do.
I think we should do a spin-off podcast, Service Stations of the UK. Steve, we're just talking about the Bournemouth game first from Thursday. Steve, you were there. Was that one of the worst games, worst performances you've seen at St Mary's? And bearing in mind, there have been a few.
I mean, there's been a lot, especially this season. I mean, I've missed a fair few this season because I've been out of the country, but. Yeah, I mean, even just in the short period I've been back and the first half of the first bit of the season, really, it's been, yeah, I mean, that's right down there, I would say. I mean, there were games earlier in the season where, I've brought it up a few times, where the Newcastle game, where we got humped 4-1, and actually that scoreline doesn't begin to tell the tale of the game, really, in that we missed some absolutely ridiculous chances and Newcastle basically had 4 shots on target and pinged them all in the corner. But Bournemouth game wasn't a smash and grab. They were, I mean, other than the first 15, as Glenn said, they were comfortable, really. The thing that I noticed most about Thursday night's game was the pace at which the two teams played. Everything Bournemouth did was zipped. And it was quick and it was done with a purpose. And very rarely did a player need to take a touch. They were laying it off immediately or flicking it around the corner. And it was a group of players that, surprisingly, given what everybody's impression of Gary O'Neill had been, they look a team surprisingly well coached and well drilled. And they knew what their roles were. They knew that eventually we would give them opportunities, and we certainly did that. I think we looked all right in the first 10 to 15 minutes, and once Bournemouth had one or two little breakaways where they threatened us and looked like that would be their obvious avenue to cause us trouble, that kind of spooked us. And all of a sudden, we were a lot more passive and obviously it was a lot more frustrating. But in terms of the pace, we were really sluggish for the most part. It was only probably the first 5 minutes, really, when Walcott had that. For once, somebody actually played the pass into him early. I think it was El Yunusi. Finally, actually played the pass at the right time. Walcott made a great run, cut inside, and unfortunately, on his left foot, he's not put the right power on it. And you thought, okay, well, 2-3 minutes in, that's a good start. That's looking good. And other than Armstrong's one, which I didn't actually realise until I saw the highlights. Actually hit the post rather than the keeper making the save. And other than that, until that sort of last 15-20 minutes where Che Adams came on and all of a sudden we looked like a vaguely functioning football team, there wasn't anything for anybody to get excited about. And then obviously you got the weather factor as well. It was a properly miserable night all pretty much from start to finish, which never helps, I don't think, when you're playing badly. I think if you're playing well those nights, you can kind of get an atmosphere going and it can be quite a sort of raucous atmosphere. But when things are going against you, those sort of weather conditions are dreadful for everybody involved. And I think that probably contributed to the sort of drab atmosphere off the pitch as well as the sluggish nature on it. Very annoying.
Yeah, we've seen too many of those games recently. I'm just waiting for Jacob to finish his wrap of the day. The hope was that we could follow up that Arsenal display, but really it couldn't have been any different. It was just so disappointing on Thursday.
Yeah, it's not a surprise though, is it? Even you saw in the first half today as well. You just think this team, it's a mental block. They're subbing in. They can't play at home. I think that's now established. Because, you know, even if they start well after 10 to 15 minutes, as soon as there's a lull, I think we've all got a part to play in it. There's a bit of groaning, booing, the silence in the crowd, but then the players as well don't do anything to get the fans back on side. I just think there's a real issue at home. And I think next year in the championship, there has to be this transformation from losing all the time to suddenly finding this habit of winning. And I think it will take a long time, to be honest with you. I don't think it's going to be smooth, even if they do go down a division.
If.
Still hopeful. Not mathematically done yet. But what I didn't like about the Bournemouth game was I've watched a lot of Bournemouth this season. Sellers was there on Sunday watching the West Ham game. They didn't put any balls into the box, crosses.
Those first two corners. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, absolutely bizarre. And then also, it's a slippery surface. Dominic Solanke runs the channels every day, all day. He does it perpetually. They always transition out wide. They create spaces out wide. And Slanter stayed in this narrow structure without really pressing and just allowing Bournemouth to put these balls into the channels where Benrick and Saletta Sarr were just exposed all the time. And even if they did well, they were continually getting that threat against Solanke. And I just think, you've seen Bournemouth. You know how they're going to play. And it's either a failure of the manager or a failure of the players to heed these tactical instructions, because something's not working. And yeah, Bournemouth fully deserved it. They're far more, much more unity amongst the fans and the players. They're just a more cohesive team. And Gary O'Neill, I don't think there's much difference between Ruben Sellers and Gary O'Neill, apart from Gary O'Neill knows how to get the best out of his players. And we saw that on Thursday night, and it should have been much more than 1-0.
Glenn, was the tone set by the team selection? I mean, we talked about play stoppers last week. They were out in force again on Thursday night, weren't they? You know, there was comparisons to that. People were comparing it to that Swansea away game when Gabbiadini scored and we kept the hopes alive. It was a million miles away from that, right from the minute the team was announced.
Play stoppers, do me a favour. Is that what we call them now?
I call him that one. I call
well,
that Glenn.
Well,
yeah.
Don't, because it... Play stoppers. Is that something we've come up with now to players that are crap and are no use when they're actually got the ball? I mean, do me a favour. Was the tone set by the team selection? Yeah, I believe so. I mean, like I said, I don't think he really knows what he's doing. So it's very similar to Ralph did this a couple of times where we have games that are a completely different assignment. As I said, Arsenal away, Bournemouth at home, completely different. And because we did relatively okay against Arsenal, he's picked as close to the same team as he can. What gets me is another thing that got me was the she got McCarthy in goal. You can't play the same way with McCarthy in goal as you can with Bazunu in possession, because he's got lead legs. Let's face it, he can't play with his feet at all. It's horrible to watch. It's like a tap dancing rhino. It's awful. And you know, Bazunu can kick the ball well, and he can play with his feet. But I mean, some of our passing moves across our own 6-yard box, which is legendary on Thursday, wasn't it? It was like three panic passes, and then McCarthy clubs it out of play on the halfway line. So there didn't seem to be any cohesion, any idea of how to deal with that. In the same way that when Tor Pall plays, we obviously don't practice how to get the most out of him either. So yeah, I think it was set. I mean, you know, who's going to be the goal threat in that starting lineup? Basically, your two furthest most forward players are Walcott and Adam Armstrong. Good in training, granted, but you know, 3 goals in 70 games, and Walcott, he's been better than most people have expected the last sort of 7-8 games, but it's still a bit hit and miss, and it's hardly a striker who's going to strike fear into the opposition. So yeah, I think the tone was set from the start, and it was it always feels like we're so scared, and as the game went on, I mean, Jacob touched on it, the sort of like booing of players, but if a defender or a midfielder has got the ball and there's a ball forward and they turn it down in favour of going sideways and backwards, then you think, okay, fair enough, you can have a go at them for that. Most of the time, there's absolutely no one moving. No one wants the ball. If Chiletazar, for example, has got the ball, Lavia wants it. Ward-Prowse doesn't really. So he's got a choice of, Lavia with two players up his backside, or he can go left to Perreault, right to Bednarek, or back to the goalkeeper, or club it up the pitch. That's it. There's no progression through the thirds. you know, whatsoever. And after the first 15 minutes, Bournemouth kind of worked out how to play against us, and everything that we'd, if we'd been planning anything, then Bournemouth had sussed it out after 15 minutes, and that was the end of that. So, long answer to a short question. I believe it was set by the team selection, and yeah, there was a very brief sort of 10-15 minutes where it looked okay, but after that, nothing.
And Jacob, were you surprised to see Alex McCarthy come in? I know we talked about him coming in before. He should have come in, was it Boxing Day? I think then he got the injury, so it didn't happen. Glenn mentioned it was probably 10 games too late. The change should have been made. Did you write the piece this week about his wages dropping if he doesn't? It was almost like it was a reminder. If he doesn't play enough games, he gets his wages dropped. Then the next thing, he's in the team and he's starting. But that can't have been the manager's decision on his own, because there's a professional goalkeeping coach that's working with them every day. And surely Andrew Sparks must have a say in who starts. So you think they share that decision, but it just seemed really bizarre to bring him in for that game.
Yeah, Andrew Sparks had a decision in pre-season, because the plan was actually for Alex McCarthy to be the number one, Bazoon to gradually step in and evolve. But because Andrew Sparks was a huge fan of Gavin Bazoon, he was really influential in the recruitment of him, because he impressed the pre-season. I remember that save in that first pre-season game in Austria. He came straight into the lineup, and I think it was quite jarring, because you think Alex McCarthy, second highest earning at the club, signed a contract in 2021, has this clause in his contract where if he doesn't play a certain amount of games, it means his money goes down, which I think if you want to be sceptical about it, you probably say, okay, that's the reason why he's not coming sooner. I don't know what the amount of games, so maybe they've passed that threshold now. So even if he plays from now to the end of the season, he still can't get that target. But I thought it was a little bit strange, because there's been really good moments to get McCarthy in before this. And considering, you know, people like to criticise McCarthy, but he was player of the season in that Gabbiadini season. He knows, he's one of the few, along with Ward-Prowse, that knows what it takes to go through one of these and experience winning these type of games. So I thought he'd come in sooner. And I know Gavin Bazunu had a few issues at Arsenal, but it wasn't his worst performance this season. I think there are other cases to drop him then. And I thought, Southampton got to a point where they've stuck with Bazunu, you might as well just keep with him, not dent his confidence by taking that starting lineup, because you're going to pre-season next year. Because I imagine he will stay Bazunu next year, and he'll probably be doubting himself over the summer. Where if he just carried on the whole season, I think that would be done really well. And even in the case of relegation, he would have learned a lot from it. But because he's on the bench, he's having to sit, he's having to play a second string role now almost, I think it's kind of, it feels a little bit off. But I think McCarthy, I think he was quite good today, actually. I thought he made a few good saves, quite good, came out quite well, a punch a few away. It's just, yeah, I think there was a perfect timing for it, and it probably was in April with seven games to go.
Is it just another example, Steve, of really poor man management?
Yeah, basically. Obviously, Nathan Jones's hand was forced in that McCarthy got that injury, presumably on Christmas Day training, if he was due to play on Boxing Day, and he wasn't then available properly. I'm not even sure he was even on the bench sort of towards the end of Jones's time. He might have just about come back at that point, but I assume Jones probably had other things on his mind. So the goalkeeper thing was probably not highest priority, which is kind of fine, really. Probably one of the few things I don't blame Nathan Jones for, actually. and yes, but then obviously Sellers comes in, and Sellers has been here since the summer. So he's seen Bazunu in training. He's seen him in games. And obviously in conversation with Andrew Sparks, that would have surely been something that had been spoken about in detail. They'd have gone through probably all areas of the team to kind of work out what they thought was the best option for us.
You'd hope.
Yeah. Stuck with Bazunu initially. Okay, fine. You've made your decision. Let's go with it. And yeah, he's just randomly picked this game to decide, nope, we're gonna make this change. And yeah, we've probably killed the self-confidence of Bazunu, who'd, I mean, you see comments. I think he'd done an interview with, I think it was in The Echo maybe a couple of weeks ago, where he said that, yeah, look, I know I've made mistakes. I'm young and I'm learning and I'm trying to improve every game. And that's kind of the attitude you expect from a young player who's kind of thrown into the deep end like that. I think, yeah, taking him out at this point is probably going to do more harm than good, I would imagine.
Another young keeper that potentially we're going to end up ruining his confidence. So let's put the Bournemouth game to bed. There was another match at the weekend, a decent first half against Newcastle, but they really are different class, and getting a result there was always going to be a big ask. So 3-1 the final score. Glenn, let's start with you on this one. Your thoughts on the game? Was it the lack of attacking intent that was the most frustrating thing? Because it went all right for the first 45 minutes, but you just know that we're not going to be able to hang on.
No, I mean, every game this season since Sellers has been in charge where we've been ahead, he's got one tactic, which is defend the hell out of it, which is to do away with attacking intent and just try and see out the game. That's all he's got. And it worked against Chelsea and it worked against Leicester before we worked out quite how terrible those teams are, certainly in Chelsea's case. Mm. But what gets me about today's performance is that he tried the same thing last week against Arsenal. It's only 7 days ago. Just tried to defend the hell out of it for the whole of the second half. And that appeared to be what we did today. I mean, Newcastle were very good second half, but there was one stat on the I saw that Newcastle, it was on about 85 minutes, Newcastle had 30 touches in our box and we'd had none.
Oh God.
And we'd had a corner as well, which just got edited out. So we didn't get a touch when we had a corner. So that kind of shows where we were. And first half, I thought we were excellent, to be honest. When I saw the 11 players, you know, it's the usual thing. You can't work out exactly where anyone's playing. Are we playing five at the back? Is Gineppo left wing back? What's going on there? It was basically the 4-2-2-2 or 4-2-3-1, depending on where you class Alcaraz's positioning. And, you know, I thought we had all the on-target shots in the first half. For all the hype about Newcastle, they didn't get anything on target. And we scored the goal and... yeah, it was decent. First half was excellent. But half time, I just found myself thinking, we've got to survive 45 minutes of Newcastle pressure plus Ruben Sellers making five substitutions. We've got to survive all that to get to the end and win the game. And, you know, both came true. Newcastle just attacked incessantly. We eventually let in the one goal and then Mr. Substitution took over and it just killed it stone dead. And I'm struggling to think of as a triple substitution. And I think after he'd done that, the ball was in our net three times in 5 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, three goals in the space of 4 minutes, although yeah, one of them ruled out for offside.
One was offside, but we just went to bits. And there's a Benji from the Echo published this lovely touch map of my mate Adam Armstrong, who basically didn't touch the ball. Again, like with Arsenal last week, made this point last week, it's quite a high quality team that you're playing against, and players like him, Elyounoussi, they're not even good enough to get a touch of the ball, let alone do anything to affect. And it's just levels. You know, we've talked about this during the season. It's just levels, and that, you know, we're a strange team. We've got six or seven players who are decent, and we'll see that next year when they end up at other Premier League clubs, probably. But and we've got so many players in our squad who are so substandard they drag the whole thing down. And when you've got a manager who doesn't even seem to have one plan that's serviceable, let alone a plan A, a plan B, plan C, whatever. It just all combined. So the second half was entirely predictable. And I mean, Newcastle, a team of their level, it improves when you take Anthony Gordon off, whoever you bring on, because he's not quite there yet. And I'm being slightly facetious there because he cost 60 million quid or whatever. But they, you know, they bought on Callum Wilson, moved Isak.
They were targeting Lianco, weren't they? And that right hand side, they obviously looked at the lineup and went, well, hang on a minute, he's playing at right back. So that's where it's going
to
be.
He was supposed to be playing at right back, but he was kind of playing right centre back. I don't know if it was a plan or whether he was just drifting in field, but he wasn't getting out wide quick enough to confront whoever had the ball on the left wing. And that's where the first goal came from. But I thought, you know, after a ropey start, I thought he actually did okay. I'd rather have him there than Maitland-Niles, to be honest. And then they brought Maitland-Niles on and he gave a goal away anyway. So it was 6-2-3s, really. So, yeah, they did seem to be targeting that right wing. But that Isak is a good player. He's unpredictable and he will cause lots of people problems, let alone Lianco. But I don't think he was the biggest problem today. But there you go. Predictable. You know, we lost 3-1. Taken in isolation, that's not too bad. But it's, you know, it's obviously not what we needed given the situation that we're in.
Yeah, which we shouldn't be in a situation where we're relying on getting a win there. Jacob, decent first half, but just massively outclassed in the second half.
Yeah, I wasn't too taken away with that first half, to be honest with you, because the atmosphere at St James's was flat. I thought Newcastle were pretty poor, really, and it just felt like everything was very passive. I thought Slanton were okay, but there was opportunities there for Newcastle, you know, and if they were on form, then I could see them get a few in that first half. So I didn't think Slanton were great, but they did what they had to do. They managed to break with bodies for the first time and they managed to score. I thought Suleimana's pace was quite good. Alcaraz causes Ruben Sellers nightmares because he never tracks back. And it's quite interesting. I was only about 10 yards up from Sellers, and throughout, him and Alcaraz were just having this conversation in Spanish about Alcaraz wasn't sure who was marking from throw-ins. And it was back and forth constantly. But then he gets the ball and he carries it. And you think, okay, that's why Ruben Sellers keeps going with him, because he seems to be angry with him all the time. There were certain parts, but I never thought Southampton were great, and I don't think they really deserved to win that game. Then the second half happened, and as soon as the first goal happens, Sellers said it afterwards, everything is triggered, all the episodes of all the other mentality, painful second halves. Yeah, and then you look at the players, they're all staring up into towards the away fans, even just looking, and I thought, oh no, here we go. It could be damaging. And they have this huddle, but I don't know if anyone else says anything in this huddle. I look at Ward-Prowse. I feel really sorry for him, but I feel sorry for a lot of these players. And Lavia, I think he's one of the young lads. There's been obviously question marks over young players' attitudes, but from what I hear, Lavia is one of the few that actually ask questions to the experienced players, is always there on time, shows good application. And I think you see that in those last 20 minutes, especially where he was really brave on the ball. And he was standing up, even if a lot of them weren't. I'd have to say Jan Benrick as well. He made up three really good blocks.
He was brilliant today. He was superb today.
Steve, just on Lavia, I mean, an exceptional young footballer. His attitude, as Jacob said, has been absolutely spot on. You can see that he was really upset at the end. And winning the ball back for that goal, I mean, he's the one shining light still, isn't he? He's still giving it his all. And it's a shame that it's not going to work out for him here.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. We've got what, four games left with him?
Yeah.
Make the most of that, I would say. Yeah, he's been excellent for the most part, despite his young age, where you could forgive a bit of inconsistency, but especially in the bigger games, he's the guy that stands out, even in kind of what has largely been our better performances, actually, against the bigger sides. He's been the guy that's taken games by the scruff of the neck and has kind of stamped his authority and imposed himself, which for a guy of that age is extraordinary. And he's going to be, injury permitting, he's going to be some player at an absolute elite club. Whoever wants him in the summer is presumably going to have to pay pretty big money, because obviously we know that City have got this buyback clause that kicks in next summer. So, and he's on a long contract. So in theory, we could dig our heels in and say, well, no, if clubs are coming in and offering us 20 or 30, we'll just say no. We'll force him to stay for another year, when City can then come in and give us 40 for him. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the summer, because you would imagine. I mean, that holding midfield role is probably the hardest to nail down in a team at elite level. And I mean, you've seen how United have completely flailed for basically a decade since Ferguson left, because they've never had anybody who can play that position well. They've had a few people in who can kind of make do occasionally, but against elite opposition, they then end up found wanting. I think Lavia is the sort of player who could go into one of those top teams now and perform well. The only side he wouldn't get in at the moment, ironically, is City, because they've got Rodri. But he's better than Calvin Phillips, and so he would be the kind of first backup. But I think he deserves to be playing every week. Todd Bowley, how many zeros are you going to put on that check for us?
On his 8-year contract. Glenn, just a quick one on the lineup. Todd Bowley, it was Stu Adams that came in for the start this time, return of Gineppo as well. Che Adams, I mean, surely he needs to be starting every game. I know he's coming back from injury. He was on the bench, he had half an hour against Bournemouth. And I think afterwards he said they have to manage his minutes and be careful. But We're not talking about a player at the start of the season here, are we?
What are we saving
out of games?
What are we saving him for? Be,
is there a big testimonial the week after the season?
Be fit for the dead rubbers at Brighton and at home to Liverpool.
It's mad. You've got to be starting him, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean he is our best striker. He has been all season, most of last season as well. So if he's fit, he has to play. He should have started against Bournemouth. Even if he could only play first half, you know, there seems to be this. My memory goes, is this the first season with five substitutes?
No, five subs came in during COVID. So that project was the first time. Yeah.
So it seems to be now that all of our managers, well, certainly Ralph and Selez, have seen, well, we'll win the game in the second half. You know, we're not good enough just to try and win it in the second half. Let's go for it from the start. He should have started against Bournemouth. He should have started today. And as it turned out, we played all right in the first half today, but yeah, relatively speaking. But yeah, it was a surprise for me, considering that he'd played against, come on as a sub against Bournemouth, that he wasn't starting today. But yeah, I couldn't work out, as I said, what on earth the lineup was going to be from the 11 players. I mean, you could argue Stuart Armstrong had a good 20 minutes against Bournemouth, so therefore he deserved to start against Newcastle, and he did okay. I mean, Gineppo is. That's the wild card for today, wasn't it? I mean, he's come in from nowhere. I keep waiting for him to play that position that we gave him a new contract for because he had a couple of good games there. He hasn't played there since. So he'll be around next season as our third choice left back or whatever. But
just on Shea, I got told on before Thursday that he could only play 15 minutes against Bournemouth, and he ended up playing half an hour or something. Mm. And I think they rushed him back anyway for the Bournemouth game. They didn't think he'd be fit till the start of May. So I think that's probably where the risk is. But yeah, you probably have to risk him now. Yeah. Don't you?
Talking of, you were talking earlier on about McCarthy and his money situation. Whilst we all know that Tallpaul is not the greatest and probably not the answer, is there anything in the fact that he's now played 9 games? Is there any sort of financial contracty type thing that comes in when he plays 10? Because he's just disappeared from the squad. You know,
I don't think so.
I just noticed he'd appeared in 9 games, so I do wonder.
It's just there's question marks about Onoachu's fitness as well, and whether he can actually be effective for more than 5 minutes in a game. And I think Selez is probably looking at it thinking he's probably not fit enough or physically capable of performing more than 10 minutes at an end of the game. So there's no point really putting him on the bench, which when you spend £18 million on the strikers, probably speaking more about the recruitment than
another
Selez,
slow hand clap to Rasmus there.
We're going to need a couple of hours, aren't we? At the end of the season, when we do the things that have gone wrong, you're going to have to strike a couple of hours out because we're going to be there all night.
Yeah, let's put Joe Aribo on the bench instead.
Well, thankfully, just 4 more games to suffer. The first of those is going to be Forest away, which is on Monday night at 8 o'clock. I think it's on the telly this one. Steve, the reverse fixture back in January, for me, that was when the penny dropped and I knew that we'd be down because that was a horrible, horrible night. And Forest have been a bit hit and miss, not brilliant away from home, obviously, but it's going to be an interesting one.
I mean, Forest will absolutely be identifying this game as the one that they have to win. I mean, essentially for us, realistically, I think we all accept that we're done. But from a mathematical perspective, we need to win that to have any even slight outside chance of suddenly sort of pulling off a miracle, sort of Fulham-esque, if you like, from that time under Roy Hodgson, where they won their last 4, I think, and stayed up on goal difference. And yeah, Forest, I mean, let's be honest, Forest are rubbish. They're so bad.
There's a lot been made of our poor recruitment, but
yes,
at the start of the season, they recruited a lot of players, didn't they?
They and recruited
it's clear,
everybody.
It's not worked.
I mean, everyone sort of said at the start, oh, they're doing a Fulham, which, yeah, I mean, basically they have. They've thrown a lot of money at a load of players, which some of them have looked all right. Most of them have come and gone. To be honest, half of them are injured, I think. So they've not had an awful luck fitness-wise, but they're an odd team in that they've got 2 or 3 players, I think. So Gibbs White, Awoyemi, and strangely, Serge Aurier, who have actually stood out for them this season. And I mean, I don't think anybody who saw him at Spurs would ever have penned him as the guy for a relegation fight. And yet he's been, by all accounts, he's been excellent. But they're a team that are kind of just on that downward slide, and can they arrest it? Their home form's been okay. Obviously, beat Brighton midweek last week to give themselves get themselves out of the bottom three at the time, they'll basically be looking to replicate that. Whether we'll be quite as obliging as, I mean, Brighton were clearly sort of reeling a little bit from their FA Cup semi-final defeat and took their eye off the ball a little bit, unfortunately for basically everybody else down the bottom end of the table. Because I think before that game, if Brighton win that game, you're just saying, well, Forest are coming down with us. But they've shown a little bit of life. Problem is, we've got to go there now and play a way that's gonna score goals. And I mean, well, yeah. I mean,
there lies the problem.
Yeah, I mean, insert your own punchline here. It's just a situation where and obviously where all our good performances have come against the good teams. Forest are not a good team, and we know this, and therefore there is no expectation that we're going to turn up and put in any sort of performance, because we'll treat it in the same way as we would a trip to Old Trafford or the Emirates, and we'll basically try and hit them on the break, when actually that's not the way to break these sort of teams down. You put pressure on their back line and they'll crumble. But that's not the way we've been playing all season, unfortunately.
I mean, Glenn, is it largely irrelevant? What are you hoping to see on Monday night? Because
I don't know. I'll pass caring, to be honest. You know, Sellers has got to pick a team to go and win, as Steve said. You know he won't. You know, there's nothing to suggest that he'll do anything other than what he does in all of these 50-50 games. You know, it'll be the players that you know are not going to do anything.
Yeah.
He'll have to go some to beat the performance of Nathan Jones's team when we lost 1-0 at home, because that is in the conversation. You know, I've been watching Saints since the 70s. That's in the conversation for the worst game, worst performance I've ever seen.
I don't think we even put in performances like that under Bramford, did we?
No. Honestly, I'm not saying the Bramford era was any good by any stretch of the imagination.
Cup final.
Most of the games, we actually looked like we were trying to win, even if it was incredibly basic. You know, lump it up to Ian Dowie, whatever. But
he scored a few goals, didn't he?
Really? Yeah. Most of them bounced in off his face. But
didn't we have 6-1-0 wins in a row that season? Yep. The last first division season.
Yeah, we'd take that now, wouldn't we? Absolutely take that.
But so we're gonna
better than all our 1-0 defeats against all the teams around us anyway.
That's what I was about to say. We're probably gonna get another 1-0 defeat, which is the most likely result from this game. I mean, Forest, I watched the game against Brighton, and yeah, as the lad said, Brighton were definitely having a bit of a hangover in that second half, and they didn't really lay a glove on Forest, and Brighton of course got back on it this weekend and won 6-0. So Forest definitely caught them at the right time. Brennan Johnson is another player that Steve didn't mention, who always seems to be one of their sort of players at the forefront. And they got a new lad in midfield called Danilo, who scored in the last couple of games. So I guess we'll have to watch him. Be interesting to see if we actually track him when he breaks off the back of our midfield, because we've not been terribly good at that in recent games. So it's another one. We have to go there and try and win, but will we? Probably not. I've accepted our fate a long time ago. I mean, the Forest game at St Mary's wasn't the time. I don't think I really accepted we were relegated. I think that was about three games into the Nathan Jones era. That was the game where I realised that Nathan Jones is appalling and we have to get rid of him as soon as possible. But then we
and recruit some decent players in January. I remember at least the transfer window's open, and at least we've got a bit of money, and we're going to bring in some players that will score some goals and turn all this round, and we'll be okay.
Horsich came in the next day, didn't he? What a rip-roaring success that's been.
But instead of that, what we did was we denied Man City the quadruple and kept him in a job for another 8 or 9 games. One of the reasons out of many why we are going down to the Championship next year.
There we are. So
as you can tell, really looking forward to Monday's game. Can't wait for it. And can't wait to talk about it on the 2 weeks today.
The following night, yeah. If you're watching live, by the way, put your score predictions for this one in the comments, because we'd like to see those. Jacob, I think lose this and it's out of our hands, isn't it? I think, would it be 9 points adrift with 3 games to go? It's going to be really difficult to get. Well, it shouldn't be difficult for the players to get motivated for this, but equally, we've been watching this team for long enough now, we know what's going to happen.
Yeah, stick a fork in Southampton, they'll probably be done by then. I spent a week actually listening to a TED talk by Rasmus Ankersen from 5 years ago in Manchester, and he did.
Was that the one where he uttered the famous line of "If it ain't broke, consider breaking it"?
Not quite. He said the table always lies. He said that's a cliche that the table never lies is wrong. If you want to go along with Rasmus Ankersen's viewpoint, then it's nothing to worry about. I think it's going to be, yeah, I think the Forest game is one of those where I think Forest will be really up for it. They're going to see this as a great opportunity. It's on an evening kickoff. It's going to be an intense atmosphere. I don't know if these players have got anything left in the tank, really. You can have all the systems you want. Sellers could have the perfect game plan from a managerial point of view. I don't know if the players have got...
It could.
But even the thing about Sellers is that I think some of his stuff is I can understand. But some of it, he's made mistakes. But it's been shown really bad and in a terrible light because of the players, because they've got nothing left. They don't really listen to him. And maybe that's his fault. But I think the players are mentally cooked. And I can see if Forest get an early goal or if they get on top, then I just worry that Southampton are just going to completely just disintegrate and it could be quite bad. But I'm hoping Southampton go there, put on a good performance and, yeah, look towards next season, really.
Well, as you can imagine, lots of really positive score predictions in the comments. Steve, I'm going to come to you first for a score prediction. What do you reckon?
Well, we're playing a game against a team directly around us, so obviously we're going to lose 1-0.
We're all going to say we're going to lose 1-0. Glenn?
Yeah, 1-0 Forest.
1-0 Forest. And Mr. Optimism, Jacob?
I was going to say 1-0 Forest, but I'll go 2-0 Forest. They'll hit Southampton on the counter in the last 5 minutes.
We'll be attacking late in the game.
A couple of other bits to get onto just before we finish. There was, you were chatting about Rasmus Ankersen and his TED talk there, Jacob. There was a question from Ellie about his reputation at Brentford, because the impression is it's hard to tell what he was responsible for, what he wasn't responsible for. I know there was a lot of stuff circulating on social media from when he started or a couple of years ago, that things didn't necessarily get off to a flying start at Brentford, and the fans have been a little bit critical. So do you know any more about like what his role was there and what we can expect?
Yeah, he worked really closely with the chairman, and he's still well like there. He was at that 3-0 Brentford game a couple of months ago. He's still got a lot of friends there, and I think he's thought of really highly there. But what's different here compared to Brentford, and it's something that you might find concerning, is that he worked alongside Phil Giles, who director of football, who was seen as the guy that was keep him level-headed. He would check and challenge Rasmus Ankersen's ideas. Ankersen would have a lot of punchy ideas, but Giles was one that worked with him, would veto some, would accept or approve the others, and therefore it had quite a good relationship, because you had Ankersen's good ideas and they were actually being used, and the ones that weren't so good that could spell disaster, Giles would just quickly brush under the carpet. And I think it's telling, since Ankersen's gone, they've not replaced him, they've just kept with Giles. So I think that could have something in there. At Southampton, he hasn't got anyone really to check or challenge him. Like Henrik Kraft is, you know, very educated, very clever man in the commercial side. But in terms of the football side, he hasn't got anyone. So I think if you're looking forward, you're probably hoping that Jason Wilcox and whoever the new head of recruitment is, it will have a big enough say and have broad enough shoulders to sometimes say, okay, Rasmus, it's a good idea. Oh, I like the idea, but let's not use it. Because as you've seen this year, a lot of it has been whims, or from the outside, it looked like whims. And yeah, for example, when Joe Shields left in October, Rasmus Ankersen told all the agents that he'd be in charge of the January recruitment. And I think from that then on in, you probably got a little bit concerned, thinking, okay, who is he going to recruit? And yeah, you've kind of seen it. But just to answer the question, yeah, he's very well thought of at Brentford, but at times he needs to be reined in.
And it's a little bit difficult at the moment to keep up with who's left or who's leaving in terms of directors, staff, coaches. Did I miss anybody this week? There was Toby Steele last week that's resigned. Obviously, was it
Matt Hale?
Matt Hale was the one this week, wasn't it? Was that the academy director, academy coach?
Yeah, academy director. He's gone. The assistant academy director left at the start of the season, Ed Vahid, but he's been replaced by Natasha Patel, who perhaps might step into the role. I'm not quite sure. But yeah, another one leaving from the academy within the infrastructure. So there'll be a lot of change. And it's a big summer for some to make all these decisions. But first and foremost, you've actually got to get the people in place.
It's the right person making the decisions. Yeah. That's going to be the thing that's going to keep us awake at night.
And they've got to let them do their job. You know, I mean...
Not be micromanaged from above.
Next to the pitch, you know, if you just talk about what's going on the pitch with the first team, you've got to let Jason Wilcox do his job. and you've got to appoint a competent manager and let him do his job along with Jason Wilcox. And that has obviously got to be, you know, input into recruitment and the style the team plays and all this sort of stuff. I mean, Mr. Big Brain has proved that it's, you know, his ideas aren't always the best. If you just look at that transfer window, which I'm sure we will at some point, you know, we signed two players for Nathan Jones, if you like, Onoachu and Bree. We signed two players, Sulemana and Orsic, who didn't fit into Nathan Jones's style of play. Then we fired Nathan Jones. And virtually none of those January players have had any sort of impact under the new manager. So yeah, Rasmus hasn't done great in his stuff that we've all seen. And all these people who have left, they can't all be wrong, can they? I'd love to be in the WhatsApp group for the ex-Saints directors and work out what they're saying about Mr. Big Brain. We'll see what happens. But as Jacob said, it's a massive summer, and they got so much to do to start turning the ship around, because at the moment it's just heading completely the wrong direction, isn't it?
If it hasn't started, it needs to start now, doesn't it? Because they've got a lot of work on.
Unless they start getting things right, we're just going to carry on and be rubbish next year as well.
Steve, let's finish on a positive. The B team, Premier League 2 champions by default, I think, because Leeds collapsed in their final game.
Leeds weren't expecting that, were we?
We were expecting playoffs.
Yeah, Leeds were expected to beat West Brom in their final game. We thought it would be reasonably tight, but Leeds have been kind of top pretty much the whole season, really. And yeah, they threw it away. Lost 2-1 to West Brom, which means that apparently Leeds missed pretty much an open goal in the last minute as well, to kind of seal it for us. And we took the title on goal difference by a single goal, I think.
We'll take that. That's good. We'll finish with that. Jacob, have you got an apple pie to follow up your wrap of the day? Or are you just waiting?
Those take about an hour to cool down, don't they?
Yeah. I might go back in, actually, because I think I've got another hour and a half till I get to the hotel. I might get an apple pie. But yeah,
we'll it was good to see you catch up with Will Smallbone as well on, was it Saturday?
Yeah. I thought hard about what is positive about Southampton this season, and I'm trying to find
the players out on loan.
Yeah, the players not actually at the club.
Stoke have been rubbish as well. They've managed to lose more home games than we have.
I actually watched a game yesterday against QPR, and oh my god, if I wanted some entertainment, I wouldn't go back there. It was atrocious. But yeah, I sat down with Will in one of the offices for a good while, and really good guy, and he spoke really well about his confidence issues playing at Stoke, why he wanted to go on loan himself. It wasn't the club decision. And next year as well, with perhaps coming back to Southampton. So, yeah, that'll be up Tuesday. And it was refreshing, actually, just to get away and see something positive.
I bet he can't wait to come back.
What sort of position does he play on the pitch at Stoke? Because we never really identified where he should be playing for us.
I asked him about that, and he'd be out in the piece. But in terms of the system under Ralph, he didn't really suit him, because he always thought he was one of those number sixes. But Ralph, obviously, because he's only young, didn't trust him enough to play alongside Ward-Prowse. Well, at Stoke, he plays in a midfield three, and he's to the right of it. He's quite attack minded, breaks in behind, and sometimes he plays in that number 10 role. I think he's probably similar to Jude Bellingham in terms of he's very athletic, wants to run in behind. He's not going to get the ball to feet much, and he gets in the box a lot, similar to Alcaraz as well, almost. So he said that he's basically found out the type of player he is through playing consistently this season, and he wasn't sure what he was, and his confidence was down because of it. But yeah, hopefully it served him well, and yeah, hopefully we'll see him back next year.
All right, look forward to reading that. On that note, that's pretty much it for this week's episode. Don't forget, you can follow Total Saints Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. It's at Total Saints Pod. The website is totalsaints.co.uk. There's a link to the online shop, and you can drop us an email during the week if you like. We've had loads this week, as you might imagine, people questioning where it went wrong this season. So we're going to save all those up, and we will address those, I promise, before we finish for the summer. We're also on Patreon, and that's where you can support the podcast with a monthly contribution. It's Patreon. .com/Total Saints Podcast. There's four different tiers on there, ranging from £5 to £20 per month. And each of the tiers comes with its own perks, including some weekly shout outs to the patrons in our Francis Benali and our Mick Shannon tier. So thanks as always to Dave Melton, Mark Atkins, Matt Hall, Andy Hollis, and Andy Thompson in the Francis Benali tier. And thanks also to Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Nick Higston, Phil Cook, Matt Rose, and Nick Reed in the Mick Shannon tier. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Glenn. Thanks to Jacob for joining us from the service station. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next time.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.